Trees can't speak, but John Eisenhower speaks their language. Talking Trees with Rosie on the House.
A couple text questions for you before we hit our final talking points. Now, it's a 480 area code. That doesn't mean a whole awful lot, because one of these other area codes in the text is 507. And I'm pretty sure wherever that is, highly unlikely we have someone streaming from out of state asking a question about bougainvilleas. But anyway, the first one from a 480 area code, irrigation redone and the landscaper took irrigation off my mesquite. When questioned about this, he said it was mature enough it didn't need irrigation. Is that true?
Well, not really. All trees need water in one way or another. If you have a lot of other shrubs and flowers and ground cover in and around your trees, of course, your trees will be borrowing water from them. But yeah, you can back off. Our trees are, most of our desert trees are pretty drought tolerant. So they don't need the amount of water that we tend to put on all of our other landscape plants. So be really careful that you don't overwater. No reason to be putting a bunch of water on trees that are just going to be turning it into vegetative growth that you're going to have to manage and prune. So if you want to kind of slow down your trees, you can back off on the water and put them on a subsistence diet, so to speak, so that they're going to be growing more slowly. I like to, lightly stress my trees out and have them a little water stressed, and then bring them back, to life with just enough water to keep them healthy, rather than to be throwing water at them, wasting your water, and also, as I said, giving the trees more water than they can utilize. So, but we have capped the emitters on desert trees in the past, but just people think that, once desert trees get established, they can live on just seasonal rain. That's not necessarily true. In some of those really dry years that we have, in a year like now, when we've had some really nice seasonal rain on a regular basis every few months, we've had a nice deep soaking. You probably could get through a annual cycle with very little supplemental water.
If you cut off the water for a tree that's used to getting water, it could see some withdrawal. And when you look at the desert, sometimes it's beautiful and it's green, sometimes it's very brown. Your tree will tend to look like the desert, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, do you want that tree to look brown at drought times or keep that supplemental water on there to keep it green and healthy?
Right. And if you do a lawn conversion and you actually take a tree off of the regular watering they were getting, that sometimes can be a delicate process, because some trees that have become accustomed to lawn irrigation for many, many years, and then people eliminate the lawns and put in a rock lawn, that can be really hard on some trees that are thirsty and need a little bit more water.
Next question, planted medium-sized queen palms, bougainvillea, and pygmy in October. What's the best way to keep them alive through the cold and winter?
Yeah, you definitely want to try to cover them with some frost cloth. Make sure that frost cloth gets all the way down to the ground, and then you can put some bricks or something on to keep that frost cloth from pulling back up. Even a few tent pegs can help. Make sure that no air gets underneath that. You want to try to keep that humidity and moisture inside that little dome of frost cloth that you've put over the top. And a little fertilizer, late season fertilization might not be a bad idea. It should be a low nitrogen formulation. You don't want to push any vegetative growth. You want to try to encourage a little more root development. So a little higher on the phosphorus and potassium end of that fertilizer mix will help encourage really strong root development. That'll make a lot of difference in terms of getting through a cold winter.
And our final 2 points on our monthly tree to-dos for December. You've got a note here about oleander leaf scorch.
Yeah, the oleander leaf scorch has been a real bummer for our Phoenix area. It's a pathogen that's killing a lot of our oleanders around town. You'll see it start with a little bit of wilting, and then eventually those wilted leaves will go brown. And if you see that happening in your oleanders, you very likely have a Xylella fastidiosa. It's that oleander leaf scorch, and there's no known cure for it.
Now, if I memorize that term, how long before they change it on me?
Well, we'll see. No, it's a terrible disease. It's killing a lot of oleanders around town. It's a kind of a slow death. Certain varieties of oleanders seem to be a little more resistant to it. Some people have had success cutting out the dead portions and then just working with their oleanders to give them a little longer life. You could fertilize them, try to improve the cultural conditions around your plants to give them a better growing environment, to help them to, you know, on their own to fight off the disease. But just like the sooty canker, this is actually brought in by an insect that feeds on the plant, and once its saliva carries the virus and it gets into the vascular system of the oleanders, it starts to travel through the oleanders. So you'll see the diebacks start out on the branch ends and work its way down into the plant. Some people have had success when they see that they have it to cut the plants all the way to the ground with the hopes they're going to get ahead of the main infection. Whether that's going to work or not, I don't know, because it could have traveled all the way down into the root system very quickly within a few days or weeks' time. But there's some people have had success actually regrowing them from the ground up.
And if you need a certified arborist for an inspection, consultation, or tree service,
saveatree.org, saveatree.com, I'm sorry, saveatree, S-A-V-A-T-R-E-E.com.